Hello, and welcome to another conversation from the Child Health Advisory Council and Career Physician. We are a group of former leaders and chiefs and chairs who are committed to passing on our experience and wisdom to the next generation of pediatric leaders and pediatricians. I'm Bruder Stapleton, chair of the Child Health Advisory Council. Other council members are Christine Gleason, Craig Hillemeyer, Renee Jenkins, Danielle LaRocca-Rina, Valerie Opapari, Bruce Rubin, Robert Sowen, Arnold Strauss, and Wesley Millican, the CEO of Career Physician, as well as John Hayes. Please visit careerphysician.com to review our leadership material and other conversations. And now, welcome to today's Insight Conversation.
Thank you for joining us today for another one of our Pediatric Insight Conversations. This group has had several conversations about recruitment and finding the right person for leadership roles, helping leaders in their roles, how to create healthy cultures, all important topics. And yet sometimes we find ourselves in situations where a faculty member is struggling and maybe not satisfied with their career and you know, maybe looking for a change. And those conversations as leaders are always disappointing for us and can sometimes be pretty difficult conversations. I wonder if we could start by asking, how do you as a department leader or a dean or a division chief, how do you monitor whether all your faculty are thriving and satisfied with their career? Bruder, you obviously had a long tenure as a department chair. Do you have any thoughts about how to best keep your finger on the pulse of faculty satisfaction?
When someone is not satisfied and you aren't aware and it leads to losing a faculty you value and had great expectations for, it's so disappointing. You know, as a chair, I tried to be strategic in my thinking about faculty in a large department. What are the important career points in the journey in your department that people find the most challenging, find dissatisfaction? One of the first things that we've had a conversation about, other conversations relate to this, and that is that it's well known that the first 90 days of a person's appointment can determine long-term satisfaction. So that is a key time. And a second time that people find significant career dissatisfaction is around the time of promotion, especially from the assistant to the associate level. Times for physician scientists and grant transitions really, really stress people and have people question their career. And then often more senior people who really want to have a change find that their passions are no longer in education or no longer in research, they're struggling. And so those are key times when you realize and you need to think about and support your faculty. And so ways to monitor that, as you've asked me, is to have a 30 and 90 day check-in that's very systematic so that you can be alert if people, once they're appointed, are feeling that they're not getting what they want, and you and the division chiefs can work to try to correct that and you know, correct the course early on is a really important thing. It's so important that people feel good about how they start their job and feel supported. The annual evaluations are often done more for meeting a requirement rather than really truly assessing, you know, how the person is feeling and doing. And especially in a large department, it may be not done by one person. So really trying to maximize that annual evaluation to assess how people are feeling. In today's world, and especially in COVID, not being able to meet personally or have the opportunity to meet personally and personally knowing people in the department and taking opportunities when you see them to stop them in the hall and say, hey, how's it going? And, you know, if you need anything, come by the office, that sort of thing. But actually, you know, taking advantage of the opportunities for annual reviews and being available to faculty and making sure that, you know, these critical time points that early on, times of promotion, times if someone's struggling with their grants, to try to to provide support and monitor during those times. And then realize that, you know, as if people may not be meeting their expectations in what their current career trajectory has been, that they might be valuable in another area in the department, and try to, rather than just, you know, say, oh, this person's failing, saying, how can we help this person be successful in a different aspect of an academic career that would allow them to be successful? So I'll stop there, but those are some of my thoughts.
Yeah, those are really important, compelling points. Yeah, the New York Times always has these interviews with successful business leaders. And I remember reading one that commented that the first thing she got rid of when she was in her role was annual reviews, because she said, as you implied, Bruder, that by doing it formally once a year, you potentially miss lots of opportunities to really stay on top of things and stay connected with people. So yeah, I think those are important points that you made. So Bruder, you touched on the fact that the person's come to you and they've said, you know, that things aren't working, they're unhappy for a variety of reasons. What are some of the resources that people have, or the approaches that people have taken to help such faculty members? Valerie, as a department chair, you undoubtedly had such conversations more than once. Any thoughts about resources or approaches that you found valuable?
Maybe I could just, before I answer that question, just kind of build on what Bruder's already spoken about. I think it's really important, and I wouldn't get rid of annual reviews. I would do both the annual reviews and also the constant efforts to touch faculty at different points of time. But the annual reviews give you a chance to really address, well, you know, last year I understood these were your goals and your priorities, and I see this year none of them have been accomplished. So what have been the barriers? What have been the issues? Have your interests changed? You know, I think some of that continuity requires a longer conversation. So I'm a proponent of annual, you know, sit downs where you really deeply discuss things. And related to that, I think that you have to listen to understand and observe to understand. So a faculty member that suddenly changes how they interact with, you know, individuals in the clinic, how they lash out at someone that's completely out of character, you know, observing changes like that can oftentimes, instead of jumping to a conclusion that there's something very bad about the person, that there might be something going on in their personal life, in their professional life, in their home life, that helps to understand how the change has occurred or why they didn't get those grants submitted. And so I think a really important role of a leader is to really work hard to not jump to conclusions, to really try and understand before you react or speak or make a judgment. If you do that, then you can learn oftentimes the myriad of different things and resources that have to be provided for any one individual who's struggling. It could be resources through your departmental human resources office. I remember once with a faculty member who was struggling about retirement, and there was a center on campus that I learned about that had all sorts of hands-on interactive opportunities for faculty to work through, you know, what were the barriers to you being fearful about retirement? And only to learn that they realized many things about themselves that they could take advantage of if they were to make the final decision to retire. So I think the resources are vast. They're often in your department. They're often in the school. They're often at the university more broadly, or sometimes it's professional help that needs to be coordinated through external sources. And I think as a leader and a division director or a chair, you will be remembered so much for that kind of effort and that kind of effort to try and understand than virtually any other thing that you do. Because when a faculty member is struggling, you know, we all want to make sure everyone succeeds, and they will remember your efforts especially if it helps them resolve in a satisfactory way, whatever the barriers are to their success.
I recall working with a junior faculty member who we mutually agreed after a fair bit of work that that academic surgery wasn't for him. And he ended up going into private practice, and he's called me subsequently to thank me for assisting him in making that move. So it's not always retaining the faculty member that's a success. Arnie, you had a comment?
Yeah, I just wanted to emphasize that not only will you be remembered as a leader by the individual with whom you interact and hopefully help, but also by everybody else in the department. When they see that a compassionate leader is invested in the faculty, that creates the trust and faith that that leader will be available to them and to everybody else when it's needed. So it's a very important aspect of creating an environment, a positive environment. I would add to what Valerie said about, and Bruder also, about personal interaction. So getting out, going to somebody's office, learning a little bit about their work, or if they have a publication, or if their grant comes close but doesn't get funded, being encouraging in those situations, I really think helps the faculty, again, believe in your leadership and continue to be positive about their future.
Chris, as a longtime division chief, how you are, your awareness of faculty who might be struggling is probably a little different than, say, it might be for the chair of a big department. Any thoughts about how you stayed on top of the temperament and the tenor of your faculty?
I'll take a little slightly different approach. Not struggling, but as a division chief, and I guess you could put this as part of sort of succession plan, if you will, but you know, I had emerging leaders or wannabe emerging leaders who would come to me and ask for advice or let me know that they were looking at division chief positions. And so what did I think and so forth. So that was an opportunity to also, and of course there are many programs that I think everybody that's probably listening in are aware around the country, especially, you know, for women, you know, ELAM, these programs for career development, all sorts of things. And several of my faculty would have looked into these and sort of want to know my advice on taking my position at some point in the future or looking elsewhere. And that was a really important opportunity for me to engage them in why were they looking at a leadership? What was important to them and thinking about being a leader? And sometimes it was more, well, that's sort of the next step and success and career. And it's like, well, so what would that mean for you if it's not just about you anymore? And have you accomplished what you wanted to accomplish in your research program? Or are you really looking for a position that's going to bring you more support? For just trying to engage them in the why and what are their values? What are their goals? What are they looking for? That was an important time. Often came up in annual reviews, but more often when they were really sort of exploring these opportunities. So they weren't necessarily struggling, but they were certainly looking to advance, and including, like Bruder had mentioned, a time of promotion. And so what was good about, you know, where were they in that pathway, and what did they need to do, and what could I help them to do to get there? The other thing, as a division chief, probably does fit more into the struggling. Either they're struggling or you're struggling with them, or both, with what they're doing. Having those conversations and engaging, you know, my faculty often, and especially if they had, you know, they were on the research track, or they were really somebody I needed for the fellowship program, to run the fellowship program, so educational scholar and so forth, or medical director, the clinical medical directors of the different units, and whether they were satisfied or not, doing a good job or not, those were really important conversations to have. And sometimes it would come forward that, well, they would really rather not be on the research track. They would really rather be on a clinical track, be a medical director. It would be great, let's work on that. Well, what if I didn't need that? that would become then a challenge. So they would want to do something else, but I didn't need that in my division right then. Or on the converse, you know, I needed it, but I could ferret out that they were not the right person for that career transition step. And so that then involved conversations that sometimes led to looking elsewhere and facilitating that and so forth. So those were the kinds of things that I dealt with. Those were difficult conversations. And of course, sometimes, of course, if they were just right for an advancement in a higher level leadership position, they were going to run a research institute, that meant that I was going to lose a really terrific person. And I had to accept that and feel that, gosh, that's just great, and want to really help them to get where they really wanted to go and where they really were needed to go. And that might not be within my institution or whatever. So that's what I would add to the conversation.
Yeah, thank you. And that that last point you made, I think, emphasizes what Valerie and Arnie were saying about, you know, if you do help someone find another place elsewhere that advances their career, I think that speaks volumes to the remaining faculty that you have their interests in heart. And so I think that's helps add to the great culture in your group. Are the situations any different if it's an individual who is filling, you touched on this a little bit, Chris, but say an individual who's currently filling a vitally important role and he or she is unique in that role and they're just not, it's not ringing their bell anymore. Arnie, any experience with that and how you've handled that?
I think we just have to accept that there are times that change is valuable and nobody is irreplaceable, including you, me, as the department chair. There's plenty of, if you have a good department and if you encourage people, there are good people available as replacements, and that's why it's beneficial. One of the reasons it's beneficial to have people either change their roles within your department or move on to another position elsewhere. One of my favorite stories is at one of the AMSPDEC meetings that I did not attend, some of the faculty that I had interacted with got together and took a picture, and there were 11 of them as department chairs. And that just told me you did the right thing. These are people who are leaders in pediatrics, even though they're not any longer at your institution. So it was great satisfaction to me, actually, to have people move on and have an impact elsewhere.
So I'd like to go back to the comment on the annual review. Whether you love them or hate them, they're often a university requirement. They're done in a relatively compressed period of time. And so it can be useful to provide faculty with a worksheet in advance of the annual review, reminding them that this will not really be a discussion about compensation, but it will be about your goals and whether you've achieved them, whether they've changed, what resources you need to meet goals, if there are new goals, and if you are interested in going forward for promotion or tenure, and what have you done to try and reach that, what is still necessary. And if you leave it fairly straightforward and expect that the faculty will think about these, provide these, you can actually save those worksheets for year after year and review them before meeting with the faculty or the division chiefs in larger divisions to monitor progress and review that so that there are no surprises.
And to be clear, I agree that the annual review in academic institutions is required, really. I guess I was just trying to emphasize the point that Bruder was making, that to not rely on that alone, that other touch points are important. Valerie, you had your hand up.
Yeah, I was going to respond to your question and follow up some of the points that we were discussing about the really difficult situation. So I recall a situation with a faculty member where, as Chris adequately said, you know, there are times when things are going on that either are perhaps not within one's belief of good practice or they're not activities that add value to the department or the school or the health system. You mentioned a surgeon who maybe changed his mind, but what about those situations where, you know, a faculty member chooses to perform certain activities that are beyond their scope, not appropriate in your mind or the minds of others, and you are in a situation where that's brought to your attention? So I have actually had to deal with that. And those are particularly difficult because you always, at the end of the day, want to, if a transition is going to occur, you want it to happen with the most honesty and the highest amount of integrity. And again, as I mentioned, you want to listen to understand. So I remember this one example where a faculty member just chose to work outside of his scope of ability training. And that was just something that I couldn't support. So we had multiple meetings about this, always collegial, always, I think, as open as they possibly could be, so that I could try to understand why it was that this individual had such desires to not respond to not just my concerns, but the concerns of others. And at the end of the day, it came down to me understanding that there was just a fundamental belief system that this individual had that was inconsistent with the faculty appointment. And once we both got to that point, it was kind of an obvious situation that, you know, it's going to require that you step down and that we can't really make the accommodations that you would like in order for you to continue your belief system, because it's just contrary to the kind of care that we provide. And, you know, at the end of the day, I don't think either of us was particularly happy, but we respected one another. And I think that that's kind of the goal for those types of difficult conversations, is at the end of the day that you've done as good a job as you possibly can to meet your needs, requirements, but also recognize and be respectful of the faculty member. But if you can't come to that point, hopefully the two of you can come to a point of mutual respect that you just can't meet in the middle, if you will. So I just wanted to offer that to kind of build on the really great comments that Chris made earlier.
The situations where, as Arnie described, someone leaves your institution to become a leader at another institution, those are in some ways victories for us in the context of our leadership role. What about the scenario that Valerie just described, where someone is unhappy because they just can't do the things they want to do, and that individual has a key role in the institution? That has impact. When somebody like that, as Valerie described, if someone like that leaves the institution, it impacts their colleagues. What are people's thoughts about how to respectfully communicate to the remaining faculty when there's an important departure? Craig, as a dean, I wondered whether you've seen lots of examples of this.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's very important to try and be very positive whenever possible, and to try and present things in a very positive way. I think that if it's going to be a negative impact, I think that honesty is very important, but I also think that you don't need to get into the details of the situation. And as part of the meetings that you might be having with the faculty member about the changes that are going to be happening in their career, I think that you should strive to agree on what the announcement's going to be, because people really do pay attention to those things. And you can't necessarily make something which is, you know, a really tough situation that's really, you know, people are at odds and everyone knows about it. But I think you can be honest and straightforward and say what's happening. But you don't want to get into too many details about why this is happening, because it's not really very respectful to that person oftentimes in situations like that. So I do think that those can be very difficult. One of the other points I think, Bob, that I wanted to make is that oftentimes when you're talking with faculty that are thinking about career changes, it's very helpful to use examples of where other career changes have actually worked out very well for faculty, because it sometimes is very difficult. If they've been you know, a researcher for 15 years or a clinician for 15 years and something has happened in their life and they're not going to be doing that same thing anymore, it's very important for them to understand, either through examples in your life or in many other faculty around the department or the institution, to give some examples where career changes actually have worked and have been successful. Because oftentimes there's a real problem with people's self-esteem when this sort of thing happens.
Well, it's been an interesting conversation. And, you know, just a few key points that I wanted to summarize. One was that, as Bruder mentioned, anticipating when these career changes are most likely to occur, key moments in a academician's life, promotion, research grants, early in their tenure, maintaining close contact. I think several of you spoke very convincingly about the importance of approaching these conversations with compassion and trying to really understand what's motivating the individual or what may be lacking. And the fact that that compassion and that deep understanding is going to help you reach a better conclusion for your department or institution, but also for the individual faculty member. And I think several people commented that in some ways, this is one of the most lasting leaders, is how we handle these difficult transitions. I think it was a great conversation. I appreciate everybody's input. Again, thank you for checking this out. And if you have other interest in other topics, please check out our website. Thank you.